There's 49 rules. Now, rule number one is accept that people are annoying. Why is that rule number one?
That is actually a Stoic concept. So Marcus Aurelius has this lovely quote when he says, when you wake up in the morning, expect to encounter troublesome, meddlesome, annoying people, because you will. And in setting that expectation, you won't be disappointed and you'll be quite well prepared when you encounter someone that perhaps doesn't think the same way you do.
Rule number 31, don't resist change. Why should we not resist change, and how can we better equip ourselves for when things do change?
The Stoics say that, you know, the world is change, everything changes. But when something does change, you may lose something, but you also gain something. And what we don't do is focus on what we gain from it.
I'd love to know, like, out of all of your rules, what's been one of the hardest that you've had to implement into your own career and your own life? Annie, welcome to the Career Confidence Podcast today. I'm really excited to have this conversation. As I just said to you before we press record, how I've sort of come across yourself and your work is I was at the airport the other day and I was in the book section and laughing out loud at some of the rules and your writings in your recent book, Stoic at Work, Ancient Wisdom to Make Your Job a Bit Less Annoying. There are some really fantastic takeaways in this book that we're going to speak on today. Before we get into that, I would love to have a bit of an introduction to yourself, your career journey. So Annie, over to you.
Well, thank you very much for having me. It's great to be here. I've had a very interesting career. I started off, it's not even on my LinkedIn profile, I actually worked in television. I took it off there. I was not there for long, because I worked in a live television program and I was meant to look after this clown on roller skates. And I lost him and it was just a disaster. So I quickly segued into journalism, which I loved, business journalism at various media outlets. And then about 8 years ago, I went to the dark side of corporate communications in working for large global corporates, writing speeches and, managing crises and issues management, all this sort of thing for quite a few companies. And I guess the shock of going from the playground of journalism where you're a lone wolf to this kind of big hive of a, you know, organized system of the corporate world inspired the book. And I actually sought some inspiration because I was so shocked that I'd open up my calendar and see that it was filled with meetings and people use different language. And I didn't understand the whole world. I was very late to it. So I sought some kind of inspiration from Marcus Aurelius to help me survive the travails of the corporate world.
Thank you so much for that introduction. And look, I would actually just love to go back to your career in the corporate world. What was it like, that whole sort of journey? And because you're still in corporate and you've sort of worked your way up. So what have you learned from that process and that journey of working in corporate and working your way up through the organizations?
Well, I don't know if I've worked my way up. I've worked my way more sideways into a lot of different roles. I think to work your way all the way up to the top, I think it requires, I'm not even sure if self-awareness is a good thing to have, because you get so many body blows that, you know, perhaps a kind of thick armor is required. But I think what I've learned is to not treat meetings with such disdain. In journalism, you just simply don't have those meetings. And so it's made me analyze what makes a good meeting, what makes a bad meeting, and what is it that you can do to upgrade a meeting or indeed not even turn up to it. And it's also helped me perhaps deal with difficult stakeholders, as they're called, but more immediately difficult stakeholders. In the journalism world, you might interview someone who's a bit tricky, or there might be another journalist that's got a towering ego, but really the stakeholder work required that kind of dance to make sure, not to keep everyone happy, but to kind of keep things ticking along, is very challenging and perhaps more challenging than I found it in my previous career. So I guess I've learned the kind of, you know, tricks and perhaps a bit more self-control, not to feel the need to disclose everything is a very good skill to have in the corporate world if you want to keep your job.
Yeah, sad but true.
Sure.
So let's now go into the rules, because these are some really sort of, like, I guess, tangible takeaways for a lot of people, but like really sort of, I guess, linked into humor. And I think they're just absolutely fantastic. So there's 49 rules. Now, rule number one is accept that people are annoying. Why is that rule number one?
I know. It seems such a cruel rule. And yet I would say it says perhaps more about my tolerance level than it does about other people. But I guess what that is actually a Stoic concept. So Marcus Aurelius has this lovely quote when he says, "When you wake up in the morning, expect to encounter troublesome, meddlesome, annoying people." Because you will, and in setting that expectation, you won't be disappointed, and you'll be quite well prepared when you encounter someone that perhaps doesn't think the same way you do, or maybe they undermine you, or maybe they're just really annoying because they chew really loudly. All these things are possible when you're in close proximity to other people. And it's a sentiment I do take from the Stoics, but it's also their other kind of antidote to that is really to consider other people's perspective. They might find you the annoying person, and that's the whole thing, right? You can't just look at things from your own perspective. You have to kind of step outside yourself. I think people are the most challenging part of working. I mean, working is such a big part of our life. It chews up extraordinary amount of time. We're spending time with people we don't choose to. They're not our friends or family. So we must find strategies and ways to make it a bit more enjoyable, fun even. There are some jobs I had that were actually fun because I just found a little cohort of like-minded spirits and, you know, had a bit of a joke on the side because, I mean, if you make work fun, then it's more enjoyable to turn up. You'll probably do a better job.
I completely agree. And I'm smiling because I have worked with people that, like you said then, would, you know, open a can of tuna for lunch and it would stink out the whole office. And, you know, I'm just sort of like thinking, like, Georgina, just again, apply that self-awareness, see it from their perspective. They've got a busy day. They haven't got time to take a lunch break, so they have to eat at their desk. And I'm always trying to just see it from other people's perspective. But it's tough. And I won't lie, on days where maybe I don't have as much patience as others, where I haven't maybe done my meditation in the morning, that could be all the thing just to set me off and go, oh, do you have to eat that there? And then you feel bad. But you're so right. Working with people is tricky. And we definitely need to sort of work on ourselves and bring our best selves to work wherever possible. But I think that's such a fantastic rule. Just accept that people are annoying and they're not always going to live up to your expectations and do what you want. And that's part of life. But I also love you talked about meetings then. And what I've noticed in the corporate world is there is a meeting's for meeting's sake. Yes. And it's like people rock up and it's like, what's the point of this? You mentioned in your book, the corporate flubber. What is this? And how can we stop using it as well, especially in meetings?
I don't know. Like when I took my first corporate job, I turned up and I went to my first meeting, the first of thousands I think I've turned up to. And someone said, oh, we need to move the needle on this. And I said to them, sorry, we're talking about a Rickle player. What's this got to do with that event? And I mean, from then on in, it was just a steady decline into a world of move the needle, shift the dial. There's a few that people the kind of people that say to me, yes, I don't like corporate jargon either, and yet they say things like reach out or unpack. But these words are all totally foreign to me because in journalism, we were, you know, we had to be succinct and clear and use accessible language. But it's almost like a sort of tribal kind of language. You're kind of in with everyone if you use it. But I do think it's also used to kind of conceal the true message. So sometimes, you know, I would always encourage corporates to use clear words, but there are times when sometimes those words can serve them well because the audience really has no idea what they're saying, and perhaps that's intentional. But some of those phrases are very strange. There's a current one going around, guardrails, which is the current new word. You know, stay in your own swim lane, or flying and building the plane at the same time. That's often rolled out in meetings. So, yeah, it amuses me to no end. And, in fact, in one job I had at this big global organisation, I started a whiteboard of what we call corporate flubber. But then some people started to get a bit offended because they liked those words. So I had to sort of strategically remove it.
Oh, that's hilarious. But I'm just sort of thinking as well, like, let's just say someone is new to the workforce. These sorts of settings and meetings can be really intimidating, especially if you have no idea what the corporate flubber is and what someone's saying and what does the acronym mean? And I'm so lost in this. What advice would you have for somebody that is in these meetings and really has no idea what's being said and then is expected to go away and do their job, but actually has got no idea and no direction of what they should actually be doing? Advice for that person?
Yes, yes. Well, a couple of things. Like the Stoics always say, they say you have two ears and one mouth, right? So you've got to listen more than you talk. And part of the problem with meetings is that people do precisely the opposite because they feel that people will think they're, you know, more amazing because they've spoken more. So I think listening is the single most powerful tool to success in the workplace. And especially if you're new, I think you need to see the lay of the land. You need to see who's who, who's operating, who's speaking, why are they speaking, what are they saying. And I think if you can't decode what they're saying, which is pretty tragic, let's face it, that people actually use these ridiculous words, you just ask questions. So be curious. So my advice to anyone starting out is to listen and be curious. And armed with those two things, you are bound to succeed.
That's such solid advice. And I completely agree with the whole listening piece, because if I reflect a little bit in my early career as well, I'd get nervous, so I'd speak more. But actually what I've learned to do now is there's power in the pause. I learned so much from just listening and observing rather than just jumping in to say my 10 cents. Actually, I like to sit back now and just watch and observe. And I find you learn so much more from doing that. So that is just such powerful advice. I want to go to rule number 12 now. It's really interesting. It's care but don't care. Can you elaborate a bit on this? I think it's really interesting.
Yeah, I was at an event at one of the corporates I worked at, and there's all these really senior executives there, and everyone was a bit looser because they'd had a little bit to drink. And I said, okay, well, just you've made it to nearly the top of the tree. What's your advice for the rest of us underlings? How can we get there? And one of them said quite profoundly, you know, care but don't care. So this guy came up with this phrase, and he said, you know, everyone cares about work, and that's good. It's good to care about work, but everyone cares too much. They care too much. We wake up at 3 a.m., you know, sort of worrying, fraught about something that someone said or something that we did that didn't go well. We you know, try and get ahead by doing extra hours at night, but really caring just enough to sort of do well and do your job well, but having a life outside is, in fact, it's better for everyone. I think it's better for your employer even. And that kind of segues neatly into having a bit of a side hustle, whether it's a creative outlet or something, because I think that balance makes the kind of everydayness of work more bearable. I think employees get sort of a better version of you if you have a more balanced life and you're not obsessing over work. I do also think some things are not improved with extra effort either.
I completely agree with this. And I've got lost in this myself in the past, where I've cared too much and that wake up at 3 a.m. thinking about work. And I've completely lost myself in this process. And I've become so entwined in the work. It almost became my identity. And I completely lost myself in that whole process. So let's just say there's somebody right now that is really ambitious. I know that this is probably younger me, that wants to climb that ladder, wants to do well, and is putting all these extra hours and is really obsessing and wants to get everything perfect, even though there's no such thing. Why should they start just to care less? And how can they start just to take a little bit of a back step away from their sort of career and that identity that they might have?
Well, I think it's a good situation for someone who's really ambitious and wants to give it their all. I suppose we all have different personalities, and I think the care but don't care is something that perhaps dawns on you as you move through your career. I think it's a difficult rule to apply when you're just getting in there and you're hungry and you want to learn, and you know, but I think it doesn't take long. It doesn't take many years of work to then sort of see that in fact dedicating your life and identity to work is fruitless, because often, as we see with prime ministers and CEOs, that the job is bigger than the person and the person is quite dispensable. So I think devoting your life to a job where you could be easily dispensed makes no sense at all. And you are better off pursuing what you're passionate about. It might be an aspect of your job. It might be a kind of charity work, or it might be painting or poetry or sport. But that balance, I think, is critical to your success. And the other thing is that in situations where you're not invested heavily in something, it's often where you have the best clarity. You can step back and you can look at what people are saying, and you can offer a sort of more sage advice than if you're down in the weeds. That's another buzzword, down in the weeds. And if you're, you know, really obsessing over detail or politics or, you know, who said what to who, I think you do your best work if you can just create that space, which is the Stoics promoted this idea of creating space. So when someone says something, to pause before you react. So space gives you the opportunity to control your thoughts. And they said the greatest power we have is controlling our thoughts, actions, and behaviors. We have no power over anyone else's. And part of the way we can do that is to have balance and to pause and listen and all use all the tools in the Stoic toolbox to succeed in the workplace.
There's so much fantastic wisdom, isn't there? If we just look back, and I read a lot. There's a bookshelf behind me now. I'm just constantly reading and learning and listening to podcasts, because my biggest fear in life is success without fulfillment, like chasing the, you know, success in whatever way that looks to different people, but this sense of non-fulfillment and not happy and just constantly just moving the goalpost over and over again. And I think that that peace of mind now, to me, is the biggest, I guess, what I focus my success around. If I'm calm in my mind and I feel good and I'm productive and I'm happy and I'm enjoying the work that I do, that is a successful week and month and year for me. But I think it's we don't, sort of a society, don't focus enough on that. But there's so much fantastic wisdom if we just look back. And this is why I'm just so pleased that you've written this book, because these rules for life are just, and for work and life, are just so, so important. But there was one rule in particular that I laughed out loud when I read it. And that's rule number 25, which is don't shag the boss. So let's just say someone's listening to this and they have done that. Look, advice, like, why should we not do that?
Well, it's funny. Other people have asked me that in interviews. I'm like, yeah, why didn't I write that? I guess proceed with caution. Perhaps I should have rephrased it. But I went to this other event. Obviously, I've been to lots of events in my work. And I was sitting next to these workplace consultants that specialize in this area of people getting quite amorous in the workplace when it goes a bit wrong and dealing with it. And they said that, they said something very interesting, and I think it's worth thinking about before you do that. And that is, when you get a bit stressed, or when people are a bit stressed, they can sexualize that issue or the workplace. And so it just might be that it could be a stress response. So I guess the rule is just more saying, think about the reasons for it before you go ahead, because naturally, if there is a power imbalance, the person lower down the pecking order is the one that's in the more vulnerable position if things don't work out. So I guess in that instance, it's really thinking about, is it the, you know, the status and the power of that person that's so alluring, because that is so fickle and transient. And of course, you know, people meet in the workplace all the time, and that's absolutely, I mean, it's great. But, just where there's a power imbalance to consider it, because I do think that that person, that's not the boss is in the more vulnerable position. And I'm sure there's many examples where it all works out for some people. Mm. But, you know, it's interesting when you work with people, you change your view of them. You spend so long with them that some of them become so much more attractive just through familiarity, or others become deeply unattractive because you decide their personality is so odious. It skews and colours our view of people because we're with them all the time.
I completely agree. And if we also reflect on that and just stay with that for a second, if you're in a marriage, say, and you've been in a marriage for, you know, 10, 20 years and you're going to work every day and you might have a really stressful home life and actually work might be, you know, where you almost get to switch off because you have two young children and you're going home to your husband and your wife and, you know, they're in their slogs and, you know, they're cleaning there with the kids. And then you go to work and everyone's all polished and putting their best selves forward. It's like, you know, I think sometimes we have this tendency to think the grass is always greener and we fantasize about what life would be like. And we focus on all the good things, but what actually we don't do is focus on actually what would be the negative of that situation. And again, I think it all comes back to what you said at the beginning, self-awareness and being like, yes, okay, I might be attracted to that person, maybe because they're in a position of power, or, you know, I'm looking at them in all their glory. But would I love this person if I'm sat on the sofa on a Sunday when they're at their, you know, in their slogs and just watching the football, whatever? Am I going to find that person attractive? Because it's true, isn't it? Yeah. We come to work and we're all suited and booted.
Yeah.
And it's power.
I'm doing actually a second book for the publisher called Stoic in Love, and it's looking at dating, relationships and breakups using Stoic wisdom. And it looks at just that, you know, that very thing that you kind of blindly go into things without considering consequences. And that's just the nature of, I suppose, attraction and love. And it's so not rational, but sometimes just introducing a tiny bit of rational thinking can actually help you.
Absolutely. I think that's almost sometimes what I've experienced about myself is I'm very practical in my thinking. I'm not very sometimes emotional, especially when it comes to these type of situations. And I always try and think practically. And I think sometimes we need to take emotion out of a situation and just be aware of our feelings. But yeah, look, it's a funny one, but it's also quite it's a good one as well, because we do need to take a step back and be like, you know, are these really feelings, or am I just sort of like, you know, fantasizing here? So it's good to be aware of those thoughts.
Yeah.
Rule number 31, don't resist change. There is a lot of change happening right now, like everywhere you look, technology advancements, like so much change is coming. Why should we not resist change, and how can we better equip ourselves for when things do change?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're hardwired to resist change because our brains simply don't have the energy. That's why we write these sort of automatic scripts to drive cars and do all these complex tasks, because we're trying to conserve energy. So it makes sense that we would sort of biologically resist change, and it's exhausting. I think that's so. Of course, in the corporate world, they have these restructures every year or every year and a half or 2 years, and you have to then work out, well, what is my job and what's that person's job and how does this system work? So I think people do resist it, and they see it in a negative way when potentially it doesn't need to be negative. And the Stoics say that, you know, the world is change, everything changes. But when something does change, you may lose something, but you also gain something. And what we don't do is focus on what we gain from it. You know, so with technology, we've gained the ability to do podcasts and to have smartphones and talk to people, you know, in the UK that we can very, very easily whenever we want. And I think we forget that. We sort of focus on the negative of it. The other thing is that it's again, that sort of, they call it the dichotomy of control, that change, external change, the sort of whirling chaos of the outside world is beyond our control. And the Stoics say it disappears into the abyss of time, and soon another change will come about. So worrying about it is quite pointless.
Oh, I've been there, you know, worrying about the worst case scenario.
Yes,
like, I mean,
scenarios.
Yeah. you know, thinking about all the things that could go wrong. And I'm so aware of those thoughts now, but I think we all do it. I think we all have this tendency to focus on the negative. And I actually think it's harder to focus on the positives of all the things, the good that can come in, because especially with all the messaging coming in from the outside world, the news and people are going to lose their jobs. The news is designed, and you've worked in journalism, right?
Yeah.
So it's designed to get attention. And I just say to people, like, just go away and do your own research. Don't just listen to what the news and the papers are telling you, like actually go and research this. But on that point, like, I think part of how we can prepare for change is, you know, making sure that we apply wisdom and we learn and we're constantly upskilling ourselves. So advice for people that are resistant to change.
Yeah.
How important do you think that knowledge and wisdom piece is?
I think it's really important, but actually something you just described then is something the Stoics did. It's called negative visualization. And just to make you feel better, it's a good thing. So imagining a whole lot of worst case scenarios is actually good. And so we should all feel good about it. And the reason is that it, as we all know, they rarely come about, and it prepares us. It prepares us beautifully for whatever change does come about. And it means that we're not ill prepared or shocked or, you know, so that's actually a good thing to think of worst case scenario. I think knowledge is a good thing. I mean, having worked in news, it is quite negative, but I mean, if you go about your daily life, think about how many nice, normal people you encounter. The news is a disproportionate representation of all that's going like wrong in the world naturally, because that's what fear sort of drives attention and eyeballs on news. But if you go about your daily life, you find mostly people are really quite nice, and there's some quite nice things. People are doing nice things for other people. They might save a rescue dog or open a car door for someone or give money to someone that doesn't have any. So I think we just got to get a bit of perspective and balance. And actually working in the news gives me perspective. I know what I'm going to read and what I'm not going to read. And I'm very careful about what I give my attention to. And the Stoics did that too. Sort of, we only have a finite time and energy. And they say that soon we're all going to die. So we have to think about how we spend our time, and spending it focusing on negative news is perhaps not the most productive way to spend our time.
Thank you so much for listening to today's podcast. I wanted to quickly pop in and talk to you about our amazing supporter, CH Talent Solutions. We are an IT and digital recruitment company based in Australia. If you are someone right now looking for a new opportunity or considering a career pivot, please reach out to one of our consultants. Or if you are somebody looking to build your team or build your company or scale, again, please reach out to us if you are looking to find the best tech talent fast. I look forward to connecting with you. Now back to today's episode. Enjoy. I completely agree. And it doesn't make you feel good. And then it's, you know, like the one habit I actually implemented into my life that really helped me was just stop checking my phone first thing in the morning. Because I thought, as soon as I pick up my phone, I'm just literally just connecting to the rest of the world. I'm not connecting to myself. So it's the first thing I do in the morning is I go within, I meditate, I think about my intentions, who I want to be that day. But that was the one change I made. And it really helped me, because I just think otherwise you're just plugging yourself into the system.
Yeah.
And you're just getting that dose of everything. So I love what you just said then. But it's, again, it's a conscious effort of what we allow in and what we choose to focus on as well. So that's really, really powerful. Rule number 36 actually really resonated with me, which is keep expectations low to avoid disappointment. I've really struggled with this over the years, because I have been somebody that set really high goals and said, I'm going to do this and I'm going to achieve this. And what I've come to realize, and I'd love your wisdom on this, is that to try and detach myself from the outcome and just to actually enjoy the process of the journey and the pursuit of the goal is more important than the actual achievement of the goal. Does that make sense?
I mean, and is there any wisdom in that? It's about the journey, not the destination.
Mm.
So I think the expectations is something I've actually implemented for a long time, my whole life, in terms of parenting, in terms of work, in terms of relationship. I've always set myself very low expectations. And actually, I realize that's my superpower, because I mean, the fact that I'm not a CEO, I don't particularly care. I'm just the only sort of test for me is that I'm doing something interesting, and that's all I care about. So am I doing something interesting? You know, obviously, is my parenting good? It's obviously never going to be excellent because who is? But I think expectations are the things that cause us sort of disappointment and pain even. And I'm working in the corporate world is interesting. I was surrounded by women in particular with very high expectations, and we had a bit of a chat about it, and it was quite a revelation to them that they didn't actually need to set high expectations. It just never occurred to them. Whereas I've lived my life like that and found that the Stoics mirrored that way of thinking, that to have a high expectation, especially over things you can't control, because you can't exactly control how your career path or relationship path or whatever happens in your future. You can't control the future. So they always say, focus on the present. You know, that's a Buddhist practice. So if you focus on the present, you know, what's important to you? As you say, what's your goal for the day? I think that's a more realistic approach rather than, you know, I want to be prime minister. You're sort of potentially setting yourself up for disappointment.
Yeah, and it leads to dissatisfaction, frustration, irritation, yeah, and unhappiness. And I've definitely felt those feelings before when I haven't achieved a goal I've set out to achieve, and then it takes me. Then it almost kind of, then I think this is where burnout comes in, because I was listening to another podcast the other day and it said that burnout happens when for the amount of effort we put in, we don't get what we want back out.
Yes.
It's that sort of cycle of working really hard and not getting the outcomes we want. That's actually what causes burnout. And I thought that was really, really interesting, because I think a lot of people could really relate to that. And it all goes back to what you're saying about the expectations. What's a better way of, let's say someone's listening to this and they really are ambitious and they want to achieve things. And they're like, well, hang on a minute. If I don't have expectations for myself, then how am I going to go about achieving what I want to achieve? So any sort of piece of advice on how they can sort of reframe that?
Well, it's not about not having expectations for yourself. I think it's about setting realistic expectations, but also knowing there's a whole bunch of variables you can't control. So the expectations have to be calibrated to what you can control. So you can set yourself an expectation. Or, you know, Marcus Aurelius always says small achievements are a small accomplishment is no small achievement, meaning those small things that happen in our favour that we see as part of our goals, achieving them, we should celebrate. And so you might set yourself a goal to listen more in a meeting, or you might set yourself a goal to not take offense when someone has a jab at you at work, or that things that you can control that you can sort of build on, and your career can be slowly built on this set of behaviors and set of actions. You know, it might be that you say, I'm going to tackle really complex tasks and not procrastinate. I'm going to do them every morning. I'll block it out in my diary. And, you know, so whatever it is, they are things you can control. But if your career is predicated on getting a certain job, you might be disappointed because, as we know, we don't know what the other candidates are like. We don't know if they've worked in that organization. They might have a lot more experience. So we're just setting ourselves up for disappointment. So even in job hunting, I think it's got to be really open and think, you know, what can I do here? You can improve your interview technique. You can do more research for a company. But setting a goal of I must get that job is probably going to be unrealistic.
I think that's such powerful advice, and I really just want people to hear that. And I think that the key piece I'm hearing is focus on the things that you can control,
yeah,
and forget the rest and just let that go. Because you, like you said, then you don't know who else is interviewing for the job. You don't know who else is applying for the job. You don't know who else is going to be, you know, in the lineup for promotion. But what you can control is how much research you do, how many jobs you apply for, how your CV comes together,
like
all of those things you have control of, and everything else is just let it go.
Yeah,
which
absolutely.
Really powerful advice. Rule number 36. I found this really interesting as well. Rule number 43. It was, remember, work happiness lies between fear and boredom. Can we dive into this? Because this is, again, really interesting.
Oh, that's based on, I read this great article that was talking more about life happiness, sitting on some sort of continuum. And I was thinking, well, you know, at work, it came about because I was on a train once and I was telling some friends at work. I said, everyone on the train looked bored and annoyed. And it's so sad that we're all going to work to, you know, change the world or change what part of the world we can. And everyone just looked bored and annoyed. What a sad state of affairs it is. And this is, by the way, post-COVID, where I think resilience has been tested with people and work and workplaces. And I think people are finding things more frustrating. And then we were sort of discussing what makes people happy. And work is a place full of fear. I think there's, you know, senior executives and there's big events and there's, you know, deadlines. And I think you're sort of in this, and when I say fear, I don't mean you fear for your life, but you're sort of in this sort of state of anxiety. But then if it's a job you've had for a while, you might be in a state of boredom. It seemed to me that they were the right sort of feelings at either end of this continuum of work, and that it's about finding where you operate more effectively. Now, obviously, because I went into journalism and then I went to the corporate world, it's clear I operate better near the fear end of the spectrum, and that I'm unfortunately discovered about myself, I'm not very good at being bored. And so I find myself in all sorts of stressful situations because that's obviously what I require. But a lot of people I know like stability and they like the same thing and they like predictability, and so they operate more at that boredom end. So it's not so much about being bored or being fearful. It's just more where do you operate, what brings out the best in you. And, you know, that might change over the course of your career. I mean, I imagine most people would want to become, you know, more stable. I've yet to discover that, but I think I should work towards that because I think I operate too much at the fear end. I think anyone that works in kind of media or, you know, journalism or, you know, anything like that, it's fast paced and it's, you know, tight deadlines. And so you're operating in that fear end.
Yeah, I can relate to that as well. But I think if I'm honest with myself, I operated like that for too long. And then I actually wanted to go the other way and be like, I just need a break. You know, I just think I just almost burnt myself out because I was like, next, exciting. And I was almost like adrenaline junkie, you know, sort of like the next fix, you know, sort of pushing myself to the absolute limits. But I think I've identified that in me now, and I know when to sort of pull it back. And like you just said then, that stability piece, but also the variety in my week as well, which is why I love the podcast, because my day-to-day sort of running my recruitment company is, you know, sort of you go through the motions. I know that I can stand on my head doing that now because I've done it for so long. But the podcast gives me that just enough variety and just that enough of like, oh, you know, who am I going to speak with today? And that little bit of uncertainty, which kind of really gives me that, I guess it's a bit of a side hustle, like you said at the start, like my creativity piece. But that's really, really interesting. I guess it all comes down to people's values of who are you as a person, applying that self-awareness. You know, you might be somebody that wants that stability, wants that safe, secure job and doesn't, you know, really, you're in a season of maybe rest and recharge, or your family is your priority and you just want a nice stable job and to come home to your family and switch off. Or you might be somebody that's really wanting to get to the next level and just constantly pushing yourself outside your comfort zone to keep on stepping up. It's just, I think life is also very seasonal as well. And I think as human beings, we go through seasons of, you know, it's honoring the season that you're in. But the key piece of thing as well, and I'd love your thoughts on this, is that when you're in that season of, say, rest and recharge, don't then compare yourself to somebody who's in a season of growth.
Yes, I think that's such a, that's such a lovely kind of analogy. And I think that comparison is just an enemy for all of us, and we shouldn't do it. And I think the more you move through your career, the more you realise it's quite fruitless. Mainly because we're all looking for different things as we mature. We do change, and we change in terms of our ambition and what we want to do. I mean, when I was a child, I wanted to be prime minister. I was very fixated on that ambition, which came not to fruition in any way, shape or form. And then throughout my career, I've changed the sorts of things I wanted to do. And now I look at that stability piece and I think that I need to probably do more work in that space because I've operated so much at the other end of the spectrum. And I suppose I have, in a sense, compared myself to people in the stability area and become quite, you know, mindful of how great things are. But I can see also that sometimes you're not stimulated there. So I suppose you have to work out your own equilibrium. We're all very different.
Mm. Yeah, I think it's finding that balance, isn't it? Because I think I've been to both extremes. Like I went traveling around Australia for 6 months in a van, and I was sort of very sort of checked out from work and I almost got bored. And then I've been over here and I've been in fear and fight or flight and high anxiety. And I think it's just coming back to that sort of place of balance in between the yin and the yang, and just trying to not let the pendulum swing too high the other way. And that's, I think if you can get that right, you're on the right path. But look, you've written such a great book, and a book that has made me laugh and smile all the way through. But I'd love to know, like, out of all of your rules, what's been one of the hardest that you've had to implement into your own career and your own life?
That's a really good question. There's a rule that I really like, which I don't implement enough and I want to do more of, and it's take a cosmic perspective. And that is when everything's piling up, it could be relationship, it could be work, it could be whatever it is, just to step back and then look at the stars and realize how small we are in the grand scheme of things. Kind of operating as part of a planet Earth. And I think that gives you the perspective to not get too bogged down in whatever stress of the day there is. And I don't think I do that enough, but I really like that rule.
Mm. And what is next for you? You've obviously written this book, you're still in the corporate world. Like, what are you sort of working on now? Where do you sort of see yourself moving, sideways, upways? Like, what's going to be next for you in your career?
Well, I've just finished writing this sequel, Stoic in Love, about relationships, which that's coming out in September. So that's been not relaxing, writing that whilst working full time. But I think going forward, I've got sort of quite ambition to write a few other books, and I don't particularly want to do them while working full time. So I'm just currently wondering how I can combine work and book writing. So that's sort of a really lovely outlet for me, and I just need to look at a way to do it so that I'm just not working all the time. If I ever met anyone that wrote a book whilst they worked full time, I was like, but how do you do it? And it worked out the only way you can do it is by waking up at 5 a.m., which is horrific, and doing work then, or at the other end of the day, or both. And I guess so for me, the next phase of my career is about finding balance. And in terms of moving up the tree, I mean, I've worked with so many people that are moving up the tree. They're CEOs, some of them. And I look at that and I realize that that's never really been my ambition at all. I think my ambition is to remain engaged and interested in whatever it is that I'm doing, and work with people that are reasonable, rational, nice human beings. Ultimately in my career would like to minimize the difficult people I have to manage. I don't manage difficult people at the moment, but encounter.
Mm. Yeah, well, that's rule number one, accepting that you're going to work with some challenging people.
Well, it's very popular. Yeah.
But look, Annie, you really are inspiring, and writing a book is something that is on my list of to-dos for sure. And when I come to do that, I'll hit you up for some advice about how you've managed your time. But you're so right. And this is the thing that people, I think, don't realize. And I'm glad you just said that, you know, I've been getting up at 5 a.m. because sometimes that's what it is. That's what it does take when you want to achieve something and you want to do something. Like, and again, this is just sort of a thought I just had before we sort of close off the podcast. But, you know, we talk a lot about balance in the working world and the business world, but sometimes I think there's a place for, there's going to be a period, and it's not going to be sustainable. It's not going to be forever, but you have to sort of prioritize work, and maybe the balance is going to slightly tip. Has that been your experience when you've been writing your books and trying to balance your full-time job and a family as well?
Yeah, so that happened exactly over Christmas. So everyone went off and had lovely holidays and kept posting photos of it. And I was just like eating a bag of M&Ms every day because I was so depressed that I had to write. But delighted that I had the opportunity and a publishing contract to do it. But, yeah, I basically just had no holiday. And so, and Easter's looking not very promising with edits. And so I think, yeah, you just have to give these things up. But, you know, as time rolls on, you don't forget, but then there will be an opportunity for a holiday down the track. And I think also we're all searching for meaning, and meaning has become, I don't know if it's become more important, but it's certainly become more important to me. And whatever everyone's meaning, it might be very different. It might be money for some people or, you know, creativity for someone else. But doing something interesting is just increasingly important to me. So an opportunity to write a book, if I have to give up all my spare time for a few months, is worth it.
There you go. And I'm glad you did write this book, because I know a lot of people will, if they read the book, and hopefully they will get a lot of ancient wisdom from the book, which is obviously your intention. But look, I'd love to have you back on when you write the next book anyway, because I think that's a really good one, like relationships. And, you know, unfortunately we are in a world now where there's a lot more divorces going on. There's a lot more challenge going on in relationship. So just, I guess my one final question would be, like, from writing this book around relationships, what is some ancient wisdom maybe that you can impart? Just one piece of advice for like relationships from the ancient greats.
Well, it's very similar to the working world, you know, and I think it's just the trouble with relationship, dating, relationships, breakups, anything to do with love, it's so utterly irrational. And one thing I would say is pausing before you react and not telling your partner to calm down are very powerful tools. And I think learning how to have a discussion when the heat is taken out of it is also perhaps more useful way to navigate challenges with another person. I think in the dating world it requires a lot of courage and patience, which are stoic virtues, and likewise with breakups. You don't want to sort of do a Glenn Close in Fatal Attraction. I think gracefully exiting, as the Stoics would encourage us to do, is a much better way forward.
I completely agree. And I'm sure there's going to be a lot of like synergies between relationships and relationships at work, and just how it all sort of blends together, right? Because, you know, we tend to sort of want to separate work from our personal lives, but everything intertwines now. It's just the way the world is. And if you're having a bad relationship, you tend to bring that into your working world as well. So I think it's a really and great next book to write.
Yeah.
But listen, thank you so much for coming on. And where can I send people to find out more about yourself and your books and everything you're working on?
Oh, at them, I'm doing a website, but maybe my Instagram page. If you just type in Annie Lawson, Stoic at Work will come up. Yeah.
Amazing. Well, I'm looking forward to having you back on when the next book is out. So we'll definitely get that scheduled in. But Annie, thank you so much for your great conversation today. Really appreciate it. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. If you've got this far, that honestly means the world to me and lets me know that you've got a lot of value from today's episode. So if I could just ask you to do one thing, pull out your phone and please leave a quick review. It honestly would mean the world to me. It will help this podcast grow and get our message out there to more people. So if you could do that for me, that would be amazing. And please reach out and just let me know what you want to hear more about, what you're interested in. It will just also help me make sure that I'm continuing to speak to topics that are relevant and also find guests that are real true experts in what you want to know more about. So have an amazing day. Thanks so much for doing that. And I can't wait to share the next episode with you.